I'm Marisa Waddell with you on Issues and Ideas. Cayucas is a little beach town on the Central Coast, just north of Morro Bay, and a little more than 20 miles south of Hearst Castle. It's known for its small-town charm and beautiful surroundings, with the beach and ocean on one side and coastal bluffs and ranch land on the others. One big reason there's still beautiful land surrounding Cayucas is the Cayucas Land Conservancy. I have a couple of folks from the Conservancy with me here today. They are board member and past president Greg Betancourt and current board president Marie Jacqua. Thank you both for coming and welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Marie, would you tell me a little bit about the mission of the Cayucas Land Conservancy? Why are you in existence?
Our mission is really very simple, and it's to create a green belt around the city of Cayucas, around the town of Cayucas, I should say, so that we preserve the natural beauty that people who live there and who visit there know and love. And that is really our one and only mission. And, we'll probably talk about that later, but we have managed to preserve a number of important places around Cayucas. I think the best way to describe it is if you're driving north from Morro Bay and you come around a curve and you look in the distance and you see Cayucas, well, all that greenery behind and the bluffs above are part of what the Land Conservancy has managed to preserve for generations to come.
Okay. And Greg, you've been with the Land Conservancy for a little while now. Can you tell me a little bit about the background?
Sure. It's a great story, actually. In Cayucas, just north of town, there's a coastal bluff about 3 miles long, runs from the north edge of town up to Via Creek. And that property forever has been ranch land, has been ag land. And in the very late 70s, 1979 or 1980, some developers from L.A. bought that property. And actually, Mayor Reardon, former mayor of L.A., was one of those folks. And their goal was to develop it, to put houses and hotel and commercial properties, and eventually to make it kind of a gated private area. They were successful for some time in making progress towards their goal. They actually had the zoning changed from ag to zoning that allowed for that kind of development. That zoning change was passed by the Board of Supervisors in the 80s and then by the Coastal Commission shortly after that. The wrinkle, actually, of where the story gets interesting is that they needed to come to the Cayucas Advisory Council because of obvious sewer and water issues. So they came to the Advisory Council, and there was a person on the Advisory Council who was very dear to us, Susan Lyon. And Susan thought to herself, oh my gosh, you know, I wonder how many people know this is really in the works. And Susan happened to be married to a guy named Roger Lyon, who's, in our estimation, certainly a brilliant land use attorney and a great guy. And between the two of them, they figured out, you know, the details of what was happening and began to rally folks around the idea of, we don't just have to accept this. So there was a grand kind of landmark meeting at the Cayucas Advisory Council in the Vets Hall in Cayucas, and I'll probably never forget it. They were literally standing room only. I'm sure the fire marshal was not there. There were probably 500 people for a presentation by the developers for their proposal for the property. It was hugely eye-opening for us. I think most people in town had really no idea. It called for a hotel with 250 rooms and commercial areas and tennis courts and about 60 homes and as I said, kind of a gated community with really limited access. A lot of that stuck in a lot of craws, but the gated community aspect was a really big deal for the community because that property, even though it had been privately held ag lands, had always been open to the public. So the Advisory Council really got very much involved in the process, and lots of folks in the community got involved in the process. They did a survey of the community of something like 300 people, and I think the percentages were something like 95% of the people said, you know, this is unacceptable. So over the next 4 or 5 years, they managed kind of defying all laws. And I think it was actually the first time in the history of the Coastal Commission that a property that had been changed, the zoning had been changed from ag to commercial or developable, had ever been downsized back to ag. And I think to the great surprise of the developers, the Board of Supervisors voted 5-0 after 4 or 5 years of education by the community of Cayucas to downzone it, I should say, down to ag. And then the Coastal Commission did the same. That would have been about 1994 or 95. Mm-hmm. The developers continued to make some attempt to come up with alternate development plans, and basically the community and the Board of Supervisors didn't really accept any of those. So they decided to sell the property, and the Trust for Public Land, this is not the official definition of the Trust for Public Land, but I often see it as kind of the real estate arm of the land conservation movement in the United States. Their function is to come up with monies to buy properties. They don't hold properties. Mm-hmm. They buy them and then give them usually to a public agency, state parks or Forest Service or whatever. So in, I think, probably 1998-ish, early 98 or 7, that they purchased the property, and then it took a couple of years for them to decide what to do with it. And that's another great story.
So that's the long story of how that was the birth of the Cayucas Land Conservancy. Right. And my guests today on Issues and Ideas are some folks from the Land Conservancy: Greg Betancourt, who we've just heard, he's a board member and past president, and then Marie Jacqua, who's a current board president of the Cayucas Land Conservancy. So can you tell me, Marie, why are you involved in the Land Conservancy? Do you have a personal story about why it's important to you to preserve these lands?
I think it's because after spending most of my life in a very crowded rural area, or urban area in Southern California, and having visited Cayucas for the last 25 or 30 years and seeing what a beautiful little gem it was, and having a chance to almost fulfill my dream of moving there and actually living in the town, I could see how important it was for this one little unique place in California to remain the way it is. And to me, it's a chance to do something that has a tiny, tiny little part of it that will live forever. In other words, the lands now that we are conserving will be there in perpetuity. So our children, great-grandchildren, great-great-great will always be able to enjoy the same beauty, have access to our beautiful bluffs, and to be able to just look at the town and marvel at how wonderful it is.
And how about you, Greg? Why are you involved? What's your story?
You know, mine's, in some ways, mine's much simpler than that, because I actually grew up in Cayucas, and I could no more not be involved than I could just kind of stop breathing. It's just, I mean, Cayucas is just, it's so corny, but Cayucas is just part of who I am. So, you know, Roger Lyon, I mentioned him earlier, used to say that he grew up in Southern California, and he used to say that when he was growing up, there were lots of towns like Cayucas, you know, Oceanside, Del Mar, Laguna. They were all individual little communities. They had their own community identities, and that has all gone away in the last 25 to 50 years. You know, now if you don't get to see freeway exit signs, you really don't know what town you're leaving and what town you're coming into. So it's really important to us to try to maintain Cayucas as a separate entity. I mean, communities all change. They need to change. You know, you're either changing or you're dying. But that doesn't mean that you have to become something, you know, a different community. So That's really our goal.
Marie, can you tell me, what are the specific lands that have been preserved so far with the help of the Land Conservancy?
Well, first is the one that Greg was talking about, which are the Estero Bluffs. And that is owned by State Parks, and the Land Conservancy owns the conservation easement on it.
And where are they located? In conjunction to the town? Are they like north of the town?
Right. They're about 3.5 miles directly north, right on the ocean, the bluffs that you see. Like I say, as you round the bend going into Cayucas, you see the bluffs in the distance.
So if you are driving through Cayucas towards Cambria, as soon as you leave the last house in Cayucas, from that point north 3.5 miles is Estero Bluff State Park.
And then we also, several years ago, acquired the easement on San Geronimo Ranch, which lies right across the highway and from the Estero Bluffs. And it will continue to be a working ranch forever. But the Land Conservancy now has a conservation easement on it, which means that we would have to approve of any development of any kind or any changes to it. And it's a lovely old early California ranch, which is beautiful in its own right, and it's a wonderful backdrop to the bluffs. And then the third thing that we are involved in acquiring is on the east side of town. There's some hills there that have some antiquated lots, and they're lots that are basically have problems with topography. We can't get water to them or sewer to them, and yet they've been sold to people who feel, most of them sight unseen, people who hope to build homes there one day, when in effect it's probably not going to happen. And so we have been able, with working with willing donors or willing sellers, to acquire some of those lands. And some were picked up by the county because of back taxes, and they, through a process, we were able to get those as well. So we have about 200 of those lots now.
Yeah, I was looking at a map from your website, and it looks to me like the lots, the parcels that you own, are scattered all throughout.
very much so. So one of the reasons why land conservancies work all over the country is because they work cooperatively with private landowners, and they're not government. We are not government in any way, shape, or form. And so, unfortunately, in our eyes, there are probably 800 property owners for 1,200 lots up there. Mm-hmm. So the lots we acquire, as Marie said, we acquire because the people are willing to sell them to us for the price that we can pay, or they donate them to us. The county has, as Marie said, has acquired some for back taxes. So to have 200 of them doesn't, 200 of 1,400 doesn't seem like that many, but we've probably added 20 this year. So we're, we just make progress. And again, it's all willing sellers, willing donors.
How long do you think it will take to get all of them?
Long after our time, I'm sure.
Yeah. Long after our time. That's an interesting question, because we continue to invest money in them. And so people will ask, well, the county is never going to let people build there. And besides that, lots of those areas are really unstable and blah, blah, blah. They'll never be able to build there. And I just have to go back and think of Malibu area and those canyons above Malibu. I mean, people didn't build there for a gazillion years until there were engineering techniques and the money to put into the properties, and then they were buildable. So,
Tell me a little bit about the Harmony Headlands. Are you involved with the Harmony Headlands?
Yes, we are involved. One of the interesting things, going back a little bit to the Estero Bluffs, is that we are in a partnership there with State Parks, and it's the first time that State Parks has ever been in a partnership with land over with another organization. And in the same way, we are somewhat partners with State Parks with Harmony Headlands, which is a state park, but we were instrumental in getting it opened. It had been, I don't know how many years they'd had it for, five or six years, and never been able to open it because of a few issues. And once again, Roger Lyon, along with Greg and some other people, sort of were instrumental in getting the parking lot done and some other things done there so that we could open the park. And now we have what we call our ambassadors up there that serve as sort of greeters and people to answer questions. They go through the State Parks training program. They're not really docents, but they are our ambassadors, and we run the ambassador program, though the land belongs to the State Parks.
Okay. And so tell me about public access to some of these lands.
Sure.
If somebody wants to visit Harmony Headlands or San Geronimo or the Estero Bluffs, how do we do it?
There are three properties, and they're two different stories. Estero Bluffs and Harmony Headlands are both state parks, and there are identifiable parking areas, and from those parking areas, anytime you want to go, you can go. I think at Harmony Headlands, because it's a road that goes out to the ocean, they try to close it at dusk, but Estero Bluffs, there are people there all the time. San Geronimo Ranch is still a privately owned cattle ranch. Conservation easement, we hold on it. Essentially, we purchased most of the development rights on that property. We didn't buy public access to that property. So there is no public access to the San Geronimo Ranch, but certainly to the other two, Harmony Headlands and Estero Bluffs.
Okay. And you mentioned the ambassadors, and mm-hmm. I'm guessing that probably there are nature walks and things like that people might find out
there
about.
There are.
They do, yes. And I think we just instituted some with Mimi.
Right.
Mimi
right.
Kimball, who's a docent with state parks, has now inaugurated a couple of walks.
So we work hand in hand with the docents at the Natural History Museum, and there are regular nature walks there and at Estero Bluffs. And three or four times a year we offer our own nature walks with some of the same leaders.
Do you have any unusual or rare species or interesting species around there?
Well, one of the issues with Harmony Headlands, and one of the things that made it difficult to open, is that it's actually something of a bird sanctuary. I'm not sure that's exactly the right term, but there are some wetlands there, and there are lots of birds that hang out there and that use that as a stopover on the north-south flight pattern. So we do see many, many birds go through there. And one of the walks that we do on Estero Bluffs is with Audubon Society folks. And we always see birds, especially in the times of year when birds are migrating. We see lots of interesting animals there.
You're listening to Issues and Ideas. I'm Marisa Waddell with you on KCBX. And my guests are from the Cayucas Land Conservancy. They are Greg Betancourt, who's a board member and past president, and also Marie Jacqua, who is the current board president. And we are talking about the lands that have been preserved and some of the access that's available. If you're interested in some beautiful land and surroundings and going for a nature walk led by some docents, we're here to learn all about that. There must be some great plants and some animals to look at. Do you see sea otters off of the Estero
Bluffs? Oh, absolutely. So sea otters, mm-hmm. whales,
dolphins.
Actually, the two parks, Harmony Headlands and Estero Bluffs, are kind of remarkably different. Harmony Headlands is almost entirely there's just a thin strip of a coastal shelf. Okay, you walk about a mile and a half from the parking area, relatively flat, out to the ocean, and it's an absolutely private location. It's ranch land on either side. You don't see any houses. You don't see anything. So you go through this little tunnel of an access way, and you're out on the bluffs all by yourself. You hear nothing. You see nothing but the ocean and what's in it. The Estero Bluffs is different. It's relatively narrow. It's ranges maybe from 100 yards wide to maybe 200 yards wide. So you're always within sight of the highway, but the trade-off is you have 3.5 miles of tide pools and rocks and beach, and that's grand. And there are protected tidal areas that accommodate seal birthing sites in the spring, otter pupping areas, all of those kinds of things.
Tell me a little bit about what a conservation easement is and how it helps you and helps the land.
A conservation easement is a legal agreement that controls what happens to a piece of property. So when you own a piece of property, you know that you not only own the right to build your house on it, but you might own oil rights or mineral rights or water rights as well. So a conservation easement is designed to protect the natural resources of a piece of property. And those resources can vary. So it might be forested if it's in New England or Montana, or it might be watershed. In some other area, it might be grasslands. In the case of Estero Bluffs, it was actually viewshed because, as I said, the highway, Highway 1, runs parallel to the ocean, and the Estero Bluffs is between the highway and the ocean. And I think 1.5 million people a year drive that road. And that's when you come from Cambria and you're driving past the Estero Bluffs, you're looking across the Estero Bay at Montana Oro and Morro Bay and Cayucas. So it's an absolutely spectacular view that no matter when you do it, you'll see usually tourists parked next to the road taking pictures. So the conservation easement that we have on this, on the Estero Bluffs was written by Roger and accepted by Trust for Public Land and State Parks, and it basically guarantees that that property will remain in perpetuity the way it is now as much as possible, and that we get to participate in the management in the sense that we have concurrence for major issues, and State Parks gets to manage it.
And we monitor
every year. And exactly. And so our obligation holding a conservation easement is to make sure that the conservation easement is being complied with, that there are no bathrooms being built or parking lots being built or trees being planted or whatever.
Do you do things like weed abatement or trail management, things like that?
We do. So we part of what our responsibility was, our task was for several years, was to develop a vegetation management plan in the Estero Bluffs. And that was one of the, even if you own a small lot, there are always issues where you have to balance the various needs. You know, I want to have my house, but I want to protect this habitat. How do you balance those? So for us, one of the issues was that we want to protect the view from the highway and from the bluffs itself, and we want it to remain as much as it was when it was purchased as possible. It had been grazed for many, many years, hundreds of years, and so it wasn't covered with brush, for example, because the cattle had grazed that. And so when State Parks took it, the cattle were taken off the property, and what we noticed within 3 or 4 years was that the brush, the coyote brush, which is a native plant, was coming back and literally taking over the property. So one of the issues we had to deal with, State Parks and the Land Conservancy, is how do we balance the conservation easement and the natural resources that were there to protect and manage the coyote brush? So we have a prescribed burn regimen there. They've done 3 or 4 burns over the property, over parts of the property. So, yeah, those are the kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm. And, Marie, do you look for volunteers to help with things like weed abatement and brush management and trail management
yes,
and things
do,
like that?
Yes, we do, and we have a volunteer that actually does monitoring for the Estero Bluffs for us. He used to be on the board, Zeke Delamas, who's a fine young man who's very interested in our mission and our goal. So he helps us out, and we've had volunteer days where people have gone out to the bluffs to help clean things up, and we repaired a windmill out there and got that working again. So we do have volunteers. We have, if I can just kind of digress for a minute to say, we have wonderful volunteers, not only at Harmony Headlands and at Estero Bluffs, but we, when we do any kind of an event or anything, we have terrific volunteers that support us in every way they can, and we're very grateful for them. They're the backbone of our organization.
How about fundraising, Marie? Where do you get the money to do everything that you need to do?
Well, we have some grants, and we have our memberships. And we always seem, anytime we have something specific, for instance, when we were closing on San Geronimo, we needed extra money for the escrow, I believe, to close escrow. And we just asked the town. We sent out a letter, and we got
$120,000.
$120,000 just from our supporters. Occasionally we have events that help us raise funds. Even what we what we don't actually classify as fundraisers, we seem to make money on because people come and they're just so delighted. We've had an annual event every Valentine's weekend. It's a We Love Cayucas. And we raise money from that and, of course, from memberships. And many people just give us donations. So we've been extremely fortunate to have a very generous and active group of people that are members of our and or supporters of our organization.
I think the reason for that, and it really is remarkable, it's unusual to say, but we don't lack for money. Although we don't have a big project coming up now, but and when we do, we'll need money, but we don't lack for money now. And the reason, I think, is because the Land Conservancy really kind of grew out of the spirit of the town. It grew out of the town coming together about the Estero Bluffs and the people who moved to Cayucas, who live in Cayucas. I kind of think of them as kind of self-selecting to be there, and they have a certain value system that meshes with the community and what we do.
So. And we are a DIY board. We are all volunteers. We have no paid staff. So, you know, we put stamps on our own letters and we do everything ourselves. And so our operating expenses are pretty much stamps and I'm not sure what
and else. Postage.
And postage. We don't have a lot of operating expenses. We do put out a couple of newsletters a year and a brochure every year, which
we pay to have the San Geronimo Ranch monitored by a trained range manager, and there just aren't very many expenses.
So what are some of your current needs?
Well, we always look to increase our membership, and we always want to have a good selection of volunteers. So we're always asking people, you know, maybe we won't need you now, but maybe in 6 months we'll have a project come up. So we're always encouraging people to volunteer. And just simply continuing the kind of support that we've always had. Cayucas is a wonderful town. The people there really love living there, and they love what the town stands for, and they're very, very supportive of us. I'm not sure if we have any current pressing needs. Everything is gratefully accepted, of course.
Right. Everything is accepted. There are some jobs, kind of volunteer jobs, that we can use help with now, and I think if you go to the website and hit the contact button, you know, that's, and say, I'm interested in helping, that would do it. We would get back to you very soon.
And what is that website?
CayucasLandConservancy.org.
That's pretty easy.
All one word.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I've had a couple of folks from the Cayucas Land Conservancy with me today on Issues and Ideas. Greg Betancourt, a board member and past president, and Marie Jacqua, who's the current board president. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thank you for having us.